Hi, hello. We have a fun episode of the Dunker Spot planned for you. We talk about some teams at the top. The Oklahoma City Thunder continue to dominate. The Atlanta Hawks are interesting and good, and they've done so without their best player, if he's still their best player. We also talk through the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Cleveland Cavaliers, good teams, but also we'll see. Quick check-in with the Milwaukee Bucks, and then we get into some early all-star discussions. New format, new game, three teams. Who should make it as of today? We talk about all of that and more on this episode. We hope you enjoy. Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Yahoo Sports Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, the always excellent, and I mean the always excellent, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great, happy to be here, excited to be here, ready to talk about some basketball.
Unbelievable. Well, we're going to do that. Let's roam the baseline, Steve. I have a couple of teams that I'd like to talk about today.
Okay, we're getting a Nakia special today. Is that what we're doing?
We might have a Nakia special because okay. I am excited to talk once again. One, we just got to start with the Oklahoma City Thunder. They have just been dominant, feels like underselling them somehow. They have not had their full assortment yet. We are still waiting on the Jalen Williams debut, the wing version at the very least. But as of recording, 14-1, fourth in offense, first in defense by a mile, first in net rating per cleaning the glass. After their 2-point loss on the second night of a back-to-back with no Chet Holmgren against the Portland Trail Blazers, they've won 6 straight games. And in those 6 games, a 125 offensive rating, a 98 defensive rating, and a near 27 net rating. It's just, it's comical what they're doing, but it also warms my basketball enjoying heart watching the Thunder, right?
Okay.
Because like you start with the offense. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is once again putting together an MVP caliber season. He has somehow gotten better. Mm-hmm. And again, this is a new conversation point that we've had. But just to kind of reinforce what he's doing on the year, 32 points a game, 5 boards, 7 assists, a steal and a half, and nearly a block. He's converting 59% of his twos. And we know how many mid-range jumpers he's able to get into. That's not supposed to happen from your guard. It's career-high efficiency inside the arc for Shai Gilgeous-Alexander right now. The rim finishing we know about, the foul drawing we know about, the mid-range shot making we know about. But this combination of those things with this volume is just insane with what he's doing. On top of this, 39% from three, Steve, on nearly 6 attempts.
Yeah, look, we can hold it right there because the thing with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, because if you get stuck in foul land, you don't necessarily understand or see the growth of his game. Mm-hmm. And so he's always adding a counter. And so first it was the drives, next it was the mid-range. Hey, I can also post up, pick and roll, I'm getting better at that. And now just casual threes. Like, it's not just that he's making more, taking more to a degree. It's the nature of them, where you made a three, I will now come back, pull up, step back three. Just like, and I'm like, wait a minute, this is early in the clock.
We ain't even run nothing.
Hold on. So that's where it's like, okay, he feels like a pitcher finding more that he can throw in his rotation. It's been fun to watch his growth because he's just kind of got a great command of his offensive game right now.
Mm-hmm. I think the overall command is what's excited me the most about Shai. We talked a little bit about the playmaking growth, as you hinted at, the pick and roll play for him. Teams early in the year, let's put two on the ball more against Shai. Let's see how he handles it. And Shai largely said, cool, I know what this is. Retreat, dribble, pass. Y'all are in rotation. We have a bunch of play finishers and smart playmakers in space. You aren't going to be able to deal with this. Or I could just drive past it if your big really isn't up to snuff up here. And now we're playing advantage basketball with me. So that just spoiled all of your plans. And so for him to now, as you mentioned, toss in some of these early clock pull-up threes, if teams are like mid-switch against him or if they're trying to play drop for whatever reason, he can just flow into these pull-ups now. He's legitimately giving you three-level stuff versus elite-level, two-level stuff with a third-level bonus, which has kind of been the bit for Shai. And again, he had a big bump in three-point shooting last year, so I don't want to sell it short. But it's felt like more of, no, I actually can just do this on all three levels at my command because I want to. It's not always a counter, I guess, is kind of the fun part for me. Sometimes he just wants these shots, and he's taking them and making them. And during this 6-game win streak, he is 13 of 23 on off the dribble threes.
Oh my.
What do you do with that? If he's making the right passing reads, he can boogie into mid post, he can get all the way to the rim, he can get to the free throw line. And then also, what is that, like 56-57% on off the dribble threes? Like, that isn't a sustainable percentage. But like, if he's doing all of these things in like 30 minutes, because they're just not playing fourth quarters at this point, what do you do with this version of the Thunder? What do you do with this version of Shea? And largely, what do you do with Thunder?
Yeah, I mean, I think it also ties in the playmaking, because when you do a good job defensively, or you show some extra help, maybe he is in a post-up, gets you with a shot fake, you show help. He's making that pass now. And so instead of a forced attempt or maybe an attempt to get a foul, he's making those passes, making those plays. I think overall, the Thunder's approach offensively has gone under the radar as far as just how comfortable they have looked and felt on that end of the floor. Offensively, they've grown. You know, they were a driving kick team. Hey, let's have pick and roll. Let's get some handoffs, some movement. And now they just kind of do all of that, but with confidence. Doesn't really matter who brings the ball up court. It hasn't really mattered who's in the game for the Thunder so far this year. We're gonna make a play. We're gonna drive and kick. We're gonna keep it moving. Off ball cutting is gonna be there. We're gonna keep it spaced. Like, we're gonna keep pressure on your defense. And we've seen that just over and over and over again. I think that flies under the radar for a lot of folks, where it's not easy to stop them. Like, you can't necessarily get them in some of the same zones that you were able to before. And that's credit to Mark Dadnault and kind of just continuing to build the space with the Thunder.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said this, because as I was getting myself ready this morning, like as I tend to do, I just walk around the house just talking basketball, getting my thoughts together, whatever, right? Very, very big proponent of talking to yourself to clear your head. I was thinking about the Thunder offense like as a concept, and like how they kind of compare to other very good offenses that we've seen over the last 10, 15 years, more so from a stylistic approach, right? And so, like, you have the Warriors, and they have all of their movement and all the shooting, et cetera. Not that they couldn't run pick and roll, but you think about the foundation of what Golden State is, it's very much the movement, the cutting, the screening, et cetera. You think about, like, the Harden Rockets or, you know, the, like, 18 Cavs and stuff like that. It's a lot of, this is the guy. I make a bunch of decisions. You are going to be wrong because I'm that good. Not that they couldn't do other stuff or sprinkle in off-ball things, but that's kind of the foundation. The Thunder are this weird hybrid of, we have Shea, who can dictate so much, especially with the playmaking growth and now this pull-up counter that he's going to more. But it's also random screens and random cuts, and you get into the Isaiah Hartenstein of it all, who can just be a hub for you, and you open up more cuts. And, like, you can't really get a beat on what they want to do schematically. Like, they can just kind of shape-shift when they need to offensively. And I really appreciated that portion of the program for them. And, again, fourth on offense this year, that's the bad end of the floor for the Oklahoma City Thunder without their second-best player. Or third, if you really believe that Chet is just now firmly too, which, fair argument to make if you want to. But, like, it's fun that they've been able to do this. And as you talk about it not mattering who's initiating offense, like, it immediately brought me to early in the Pelicans game, which, no more Willie Green, James Borrego, we'll see how it goes. There's your quick news thought there. But about 9 minute mark of the first quarter of that game, sideline inbound, they get it to Shea, they're going to flow into Volley Veer action. So Isaiah Hartenstein is going to set a screen for Shea. He really just slips out of there. Sets an off-ball screen for Cason Wallace. Two-man game with Cason Wallace and Isaiah Hartenstein. Cason explores. Doesn't really have it because the Pelicans are showing all kinds of help in the middle of the floor. Isaiah Hartenstein rolled and looped around to the dunker. Goes back to Hartenstein. He wants to get it to Shea. Couldn't do it. Tosses it ahead to Lu Dort. Lu Dort drives. Doesn't have it because Pelicans are there. Back to Hartenstein. Hartenstein immediately flows into a pitch to Chet Holmgren, rescreen. It's pick and roll with those two. Chet gets downhill, draws a foul. And it's just like, that's not a highlight possession for OKC. But like, Shea touched the ball very early, didn't touch it again, and it didn't matter. They were still able to generate something good. It's like there's a collective trust that they have to make the right play, make the right decision, get off of it if they don't have it, that just permeates that entire rotation.
I think it's a collective confidence, to be honest with you. And I think that's where they've kind of achieved the blend that they want offensively, because we know Shea will attack matchups at times if they need to. But you can have Cason Wallace initiate. You can go with pick and roll with an empty corner and you're not sure who's going to slip, who's going to roll. You can get to drive and kick. You can play random. they're so good defensively, they can push and transition, but also, okay, we're just going to flow and do different things. So if Lou Dort's bringing it up, there's no easy tell on what's going to happen. You don't mm-hmm. you know, if Isaiah Hartenstein gets an elbow catch, you don't know if he's dribble handing off to Shea or someone else. So they just kind of put you in a tough spot defensively because there's not necessarily one thing you can poke at right now, especially when they're defending at this high of a level. Because it's not like they're always facing a set defense. So they can just kind of flow into different actions, flow into different things. And it gives their other guys a base to where, okay, we're just going to operate in this. And we can come in and play at a certain level, whether it's Isaiah Joe, whether it's Wiggins, whoever it is in the lineup, you know, AJ Mitchell, we can attack in a certain way because that's what our foundation is. And so you focus in on, okay, we're going to help on Shea. Well, where's all this help coming from? Okay. there's cuts, they're clearing space, they're doing different things. It's hard to contain them, and they've done a really good job of continuing to build that. So I think it's just stacking different things on top of each other.
Yeah, I think I want to get to the defense because, this defense. But first, I want to talk about the bigs real quick.
Okay.
I want to talk about Chet. I want to talk about Isaiah Hartenstein. Because like we've talked a little bit about Chet and his scoring aggression, his scoring growth. I continue to be a big fan of what he's doing in the middle of the floor. It could just be random screen for him to get a curl and a catch at the elbow. It could just be an ISO attack for him. He's once again seeking out more physicality on some of these drives, getting into some of the shoulder nudges to create space. And these turnaround jumpers, these pull-up jumpers for him, it's getting kind of spooky, Steve. I'm not going to hold you. It's getting kind of spooky with what he's doing as a scorer. And then the Isaiah Hartenstein of it all.
Oh, you did just the thing. You did the thing. You did the thing. Put a quarter in the bucket, buddy.
Oh, man, you got me. But no, like just quietly having a career year for OKC right now. During this win streak, he has been nuts. I think it's like 16-11-3 for him during the win streak. You know, we've talked about going back to last year, just the push shots that he just felt automatic on, except for that one series where he just couldn't hit any of them, but whatever. But like that's automatic. You have that counter. But he's felt more aggressive seeking out. It's not just the push shot. Like he's taking the extra dribble, the extra nudge to turn these into like baby hooks or just actual shots at the rim. That part's been exciting. And I think part of the volume going up for him as a handoff hub has been like Chet missed a little bit of time and stuff like that. But he's taking more ownership of this offense. He's making more decisions in the half court, it feels like. And that's greasing the wheels for everyone. And then as we flow into the defense, like those two together have just been tons of fun together. In addition to the perimeter collection that they have. But those, it was a little bit of, not a big question because they were still good, but like there was a little hint of, is OKC actually going to go double big last year? And what is that going to look like? And again, they end up winning a title. And this year, those two playing together, they're blitzing people. Like there's just a level of comfort with those two on the floor on both ends that has popped for me on film at the very least. I wanted to make sure I shouted out what they're both doing.
Makes sense. Do you have any concern about Chet Holmgren against wings going forward? Is this a playoff question for you?
Like he still has to solve it in a playoff setting. I will say I feel better about it based on what he's done so far to start the year, but that is still something that he has to do once they get to the postseason. So I guess like, yes, but the concern is starting to drop because he does just seem more comfortable to me.
Well, it gets tricky. It gets interesting. And we've done all this and seen this team play this well without even seeing Jalen Williams, who got even better last year, which gets really interesting because as a defense, okay, how do we appropriate who guards who? Because in theory, Chet should be the one that we poke at to say, all right, you have to have a bad time. Shea and Jalen Williams, we got to contest. We got to try and keep you off the line. We need your field goal attempts to be close to your points. But Chet, you can't boogie. You got to be in a box. And so I feel like as the season goes on, I want to see what teams try to do. Who do teams try and take away? How do they try and just poke at the Thunder to get them back into some of the modes we've seen them in? I think that's going to be the mission for the rest of the league. Hey, you can't be this offensively and that defensively. We got to get you in a position where you don't have the same comfort with two-way lineups. We got to get you in a spot where you don't have the same flow offensively. We got to slow you down. And then on the other end, we got to figure out how to continue to attack you and put you in tough spots. Because I think the secret is you have to be able to poke at Oklahoma City's bigs. You've got to be able to put them in a position where this coverage isn't working, the switching isn't working. Obviously, they're great defensively. We're going to talk about it. But like, you have to really kind of get them off the board to a degree.
Mm-hmm. See, that was going to be a general question I asked you towards like the end of this Thunder segment. Just what is the, not necessarily the solve, because I don't know if there's just a pure you do this, you win against OKC with how good they are. But what are the types of things that you expect, or if there's anything that you've noticed on film so far this year that teams have tried to kind of poke at to bog OKC down? And it's like, you know, hints of zone sometimes, but it doesn't feel like anyone's actually found a thing yet, which is terrifying within the broader context of Jalen Williams is going to make his return at some point. Stop me if you heard this before, but it's, I don't know. That's where I get excited watching this team, man. Like, they're just so darn good. But to the defense.
Go, yeah, about to say, go ahead and talk about the defense, buddy. Go ahead and get that glee off, big dog.
Hey, man. Like, and like, the defense has been this dominant. And as you know, I am a big Chet believer defensively. And like, Chet hasn't been like the A-plus version of himself yet. Has still been good, but he hasn't even been the A-plus version of himself yet. And yet, the Thunder forced these turnovers. And yet, they get you late in the clock. And yet, you try to run anything towards a sideline, you don't know if it's going to be a switch, a trap, or some mixture of the two. And then you have to throw the ball against a defense that's waiting on you to throw the ball. It's so fun when they have their stretches. Of you're just not only are you not going to score, you're probably not going to get a shot up. Here's the quickest 12-0 run you have ever seen, and a timeout, and everyone has their head down because you just have not been able to do anything. And of the 12-0 run, like, Shea might score two of those because everyone else is forced to turnovers. So you don't even have that in your pocket, like the star turned up. I just love watching this defense, Steve. I love watching the point of attack defense. I love the mix of switching that they're doing on and off the ball. The random scrams that they can get into if they feel like they need to scram out of something. Oftentimes, they don't feel like they need to. They have strong guards. But, like, watching their backline communication when they get into that back has been fun. The mixture of coverages that we've seen from Chet, some of the late switches from Isaiah Hartenstein on top of this. Like, they are, to your point, like, teams have to poke at the bigs. Hasn't been A-plus Chet yet, but, like, he at least seems up for the challenge when he's on the perimeter. Isaiah Hartenstein has been up for the challenge when he's been on the perimeter. One of those two guys goes to the bench, and now here's Jalen Williams, who can also do some of the late switch stuff. And if you try to attack the basket while he's in the paint, that is just going to be a charge drawn. And now you're mad and in pain. You just rattle up the names, man. Cason Wallace, again, I think he's defending at an all-defense level so far to start the year, Steve. Alex Caruso, your early pick for second-best defender in the league. We had that free throw, I think, week one or week two of the pod? He's been insane. Again, they just got Lu Dort back, and you know he's going to annoy people. Shea with active hands. A.J. Mitchell, Isaiah Joe fighting at the very least. Like, among those are the two you try to poke at.
I was going to say.
Isaiah Joe than A.J. Mitchell, yeah, who's been up for the challenge.
You went a little deep in, a little too much dip on the chip there.
No. That's why I gave the effort deal more so than they're locking people down, which I'm glad we got here, too. Defensive rating is not an individual stat. I don't need to see that as an individual stat anymore. Please stop it. But anyway.
But they have like five of the top.
No.
Okay, sorry.
No, that's not how that's supposed to be used. But anyway, that's your best bet at trying to poke at one of the perimeter guys. And like, even if you do that, you have to deal with everyone else and help. So, like, even that isn't the cleanest win for you. Like, they just swarm you, and it's been a lot of fun to watch.
Well, I mean, I think the biggest strength that we saw last year during the Thunder run was, hey, they have a lot of this personnel that can defend your top players. And they have they are willing to put them on, doesn't matter if it's a point guard, a shooting guard, a wing, a big who can drive. We have the versatility to kind of just poke at what you want to do with different players who can defend. So we can throw some switches at you. We can throw different matchups at you. We play active. I know a lot of people like to say, hey, they're allowed to play a different sport. No, we say this about every team that's really good at defense, whether it was the Tibbs Bulls, the Grit and Grind Grizzlies, every team that was good at defense got the, well, they can foul. No, there's just physical defense. You just have to know how to show your hands and be active and create contact in different ways. It's just how defense is played. I think when you have the ability to have screen navigation with Lu Dort, with Caruso, when you have different versatility with your bigs, and you have an activity and an ability to rotate with, hey, we have people who can throw at different guys, that creates a combination that makes it really tough to score consistently. And so one of the things I'm looking forward to seeing is, okay, what team hits them a little bit? And what happens when they ding the defense a little bit? And how does OKC respond? Because it's a long season, and the playoffs are going to be a fight. Doesn't matter how many games the Thunder win. So how do they respond when someone does this? But, I mean, it's easier said than done. It's a lot easier to say this and put your coffee down and open your laptop than to actually witness it during a game.
Yeah, it's just an avalanche of goodness for them defensively sometimes that you can't really do much with. You just kind of have to wait it out. It's kind of tough. But salute to the Oklahoma City Thunder. They've been pretty easily the best team in the league to start the season, which is saying something considering how good Denver's been and how good Detroit's been. They have still been a step above. So wanted to give them some love, Steve.
There we go. I'm glad we did that. Happy for you. Excited for you. Who is next on the checklist for Nekias Duncan?
Yes. If we're still in the Nekias zone, Steve, it is time to talk about the Atlanta Hawks.
Oh, my.
We are so back. We are so back. Just kidding. But no, in all seriousness, the Atlanta Hawks, as of recording, 9-5, 18th in offense, 7th in defense, 13th in net rating per cleaning the glass. Since Trae Young has been out, so since October 30th, the Hawks are 7-2.
Okay.
And in that stretch, 9th in offense, 4th in defense, 9th in net rating. And I know there's a natural inclination to do the, do they even need Trae Young? Is it time to trade? Like, I don't think that's the case. Let me answer that one early so I can just talk about the fun stuff. No, I want to see Trae with this group. I think he will help their half-court offense because there are some ruts sometimes in the half-court offensively for Atlanta. So let's get that off the top.
Well, no, I was going to raise my hand before you continue. So because I've seen a lot of the statistical floating around. Hey, the Hawks without Trae Young, they're doing this, and that's fantastic. One, if you say this, you are not allowed to say the Hawks need a creator if they move on from Trae Young for a minimum 3 years. Number two, have we paid attention to who they've beaten during this stretch?
Yes.
Pacers, Magic. Mm-hmm. Lakers on a night where the Lakers clearly did not have it, and J.J. Redick let us know immediately. at the Clippers, at the Kings, at the Jazz, at the Suns. Now, I will say, sweeping a West Coast trip, no matter who was in the lineup, is very impressive. So I can poke at the names a little bit and have some fun. But you go 4-0 on a West Coast road trip, you have a good time coming back home. I'll tell you that much. So salute to the Hawks for that. But we can slow down a little bit on Trae Young's not needed. That's just my personal opinion.
No, I feel that. That's where I'm just like, I want to see him with this assortment. Because before he went down, I think Trae has notoriously been like an overall like slow starter. But, like, Trae just was not making shots. Like, the defense stuff was wonky once again. Like, he was not playing well. And I think it is fair and valid to say that part. I don't think that is the version of Trae Young that the Hawks were going to get all season long. If it was, we were going to have different conversations about the Trae Young Atlanta Hawks experience. So I just don't believe that's going to be the bit. So I would like to see him come back and see how he fits into this. Now, as for the actual fun with this Hawks group while Trae's been out, it starts with the defense for me. And I want to start with a comparison, Steve.
Okay.
Watching this Hawks defense, and while acknowledging the overall personnel is better, this is more of a stylistic comp, to be clear. But, like, watching them, it reminds me of that Pelicans team from a couple of years ago. It was like, how are they a top 10
where
defense?
Where are you going with this? What?
I say this because, like, just if you're watching the Hawks on defense, watch their low man.
Okay.
Coming in early, not just coming in early, but like they're meeting rollers at the free throw line or at the dotted line. They want to make sure there is a high tag on these. And then the guy that has to split, it's a ball hog. It is Nikhil Alexander Walker sometimes. It's, you know, Jalen Johnson, who I still want more consistency from him defensively. But he can play the passing lanes very well and incredibly well for a guy within his position group. He does it. You go to the bench, Keaton Wallace. Very good at splitting too and playing the passing lanes. Go back to the starting group. Zachary Richardson with his length can split and play too and get steals. Like the Hawks have done such a good job of forcing turnovers all year long, but specifically during this run. They are bleeding corner three attempts because there are counters to this kind of early and high help. We can make the skip pass early or, okay, cool. We got 2v1. Here's a pin in. Here's a flare. There are counters to this. But foundationally, we got Ball Hogs at the top of the defense, Dyson Daniels, et cetera. And, you know, I'll include him in this. When he's off the ball, he can obviously play the passing lanes. But we're going to pressure you up top. Sometimes Onyeka Okongwu is in a super deep drop and that turns into a late switch. Sometimes he's up at the level. Sometimes it's ice if they're near the sideline. That low man is coming in and they're just daring you. Make the skip. Make the skip. If you're not doing anything on the weak side, you're stationary, make the skip. We dare you. More often than not, it's going the other way. And so, like, again, stylistically, that's where I'm like, oh, that Pelicans group also would just bring their low man incredibly high and goad you into these passes.
I hear it. I receive it. I think the one point you made is the turnover portion. If you are dependent on forcing turnovers, that's fun until it's not. And so I think part of this is without Trae Young and without Porzingis during stretches, we have to lean into this defensively. We have to execute at a certain level defensively. We have to be active and we have to rotate. Now, the thing is, the more you put this on tape, the more teams can take a look and say, okay, you guys are always in early. How about we make you defend multiple actions? And I think that's the trick sometimes. You get baited into trying to go with a quick drive or a one pick and roll. And this is a team that has size. They have athleticism. And as you said, they are active. So are you keeping pressure on them to defend multiple actions, or are you letting them off the hook a little bit? Because for all the success they've had, they were down pretty big in that Phoenix game. And they have given up quite a few points. Like the Jazz scored on them. The Kings got to 100. Like, it's not always tremendous. So can they sustain it and be a multiple effort defensive team consistently? And how do you do this once you get Trae Young back? Once you get Kristaps Porzingis back? Because they are going to have scheme limitations, seems rude, but they're going to have some question marks. And teams are going to put them in action. So how do you balance out what we're seeing right now, where, hey, we kind of have to play all these guys who are big and athletic versus what they'll have to do in the future?
I think that's fair. And I will say, like, two things on that point, Steve. The one thing I have appreciated, like, primarily, again, they're going to bring that low man high. They want to fly around, et cetera. Like, there has been a little bit of nuance to it, at the very least. Like, as you mentioned, Kristaps has missed the stretch. When he's been in, like, they're not doing that as aggressively because they're trusting, well, this guy is just 7'3". And so, like, he can just absorb some of these. So I am glad that it's a primary. It's not a 100% automatic for them on that front. And so to your point, they are going to have to continue building out that nuance and being able to show different things and ultimately being able to sustain later in possessions. But I'm glad that they're putting some of that stuff on film. And, like, to that point, I want to circle back to Keaton Wallace very quickly, kind of bridge this within the nuance point for what they're doing on the weak side defensively. No, because, like, you brought up the Suns game. And, like, two things that intrigued me from that Suns game, with him in particular, there was one possession, both came in the first quarter of that game, but, like, there was one possession where Phoenix goes into, like, Devin Booker setting this ram screen for them to flow into a pick and roll. Booker's going to go to the corner. And Keaton Wallace technically would have been the low man on that possession. But he's beside, I think, Asa Newell on the floor. And he's like, hey, literally hits him. Like, hey, switch places with me. You be low. I'll be the guy that kind of splits on the second. I was like, okay, I'm glad you're seeing it. Play ends in a foul. Book gets the ball. He drives past Newell, draws a foul. But it's just like, I'm glad that you're, like, seeing that and you're trying to navigate and trying to manipulate things defensively. Like, that feels like a good sign to me. And then there was a possession late in that first quarter. Devin Booker going mismatch hunting with Luke Kennard, which, to the point about they're going to have to navigate some stuff when Trae gets back. I would imagine Trae's going to be put in action with guard screens too. And so Luke Kennard got a heavy dose of that in that Suns game. But end of the first quarter, they go high. Atlanta ends up putting two on the ball because they don't want to switch Luke Kennard. But while this pick and roll is being set up, Keaton Wallace is kind of looking at, I want to say it was Risha Shayans, another one of the wings. He's like, hey, no, actually, y'all stay. Don't peel in. I will make the rotation on this. You get a slip. He jumps the pass. It's a turnover. It's going the other way. I'm just like, okay, they're doing little things here on the weak side to where it isn't as automatic. They're trying to make sure they have size low, et cetera. So, like, those feel like good signs. They have to continue to do it, but I like that they're sprinkling this stuff in. That was kind of the major point that I wanted to make there. I hope that makes sense.
No, it makes sense. I understand it. And the defense has been what it has been. They need to be at a certain level to have success. For me, when you talk about the Hawks, it's, okay, we have no Trae Young. Nikhil Alexander-Walker, have some fun. Jalen Johnson, get after it. Onyeka Okongwu, go ahead and do things offensively. And it really helps when Vete Krejci is able to just make every shot that you've seen from three over and over and over again. So I think for me, I'm curious to see how much of this is going to carry over, because now you kind of have everyone else lifting up offensively, and now you're going to add more pieces that should give you a balance where we have the Trae Young, we have these guys who can get to drive and kick and play randomly. Everyone's kind of feeling a flow offensively. And does that come together? Because don't forget, the Eastern Conference is a land of opportunity this year. There's no true hierarchy right now. Knicks, Cavs, eventually, they're going to knock on the door. We all know that. Pistons are just skyrocketing. You should check out last week's episode as well. I talked about them. But you put together a good stretch of basketball, you might be the 3-4 seed. You have a week where you're bad, you might be back in the play-in. Who knows?
that's pretty true. That's pretty true. Actually, can we hang on to offense very quickly?
Sure.
Don't want to do it like another 30, because we got other stuff to get to. But
30?
With this? No, I'm saying we're not going to do that. We're not going to do that. I could, but like, we're not going to do that. In all seriousness, to the offense point, I think as they've tried to figure things out without Trae Young, it has been a little bit of equal opportunity. Like Jalen Johnson taking the brunt of it, but it has been a good bit of Onyeka Okongwu, which I'll quickly say, I have really enjoyed his work as the trail man for this offense. Like a lot of stuff after misses, he's just the last guy down. And now he gets the ball above the break. You don't know what it's going to be. It may just be an above the break three, which he's just shooting the leather off the ball to start the year. He's not too long away from an 8-of-14 from three game against Utah. But like it may just be trail three from Onyeka Okongwu. And you kind of have to close out to those now. It may be a handoff to either side of the floor. Because he is a slick ball handler for his size and position group, it could just be a fake handoff, and now he's getting downhill. He may just catch it in the trail position and just drive just off rip. And because he's quicker than most of the bigs that he's facing, that's a problem too. He's scoring more, he's making more decisions, he's drawing more fouls, and he just aids their flow. Like he can just kind of be the trigger point for them. And if things break down middle of the possession, lower third of the possession, here's a flash from Onyeka Okongwu. He's making more decisions, and we can get into the drive or shoot mix once again. So, like, I love that he's been able to expand his game and expand his role through this stretch. And I think, like, that part can still be sustainable when Trae comes back. Like, I think he could just handle those kind of duties. And to the Jalen Johnson of it all, like, you see him, one, he's just a monster in transition, and that just pops. And when you're forcing as many turnovers as the Hawks have been this year and during this 7-2 stretch, you just get to see a lot more open floor Jalen Johnson. But even within the half court, like he's also being used as a hub. Like it's not just high inverted pick and roll for him, though he can do that. But they're tossed to him at the elbow and let him make decisions. They are moving him around the chessboard. I think there's more room for more things within that stretch, but like they are moving him around a little bit. And as you mentioned, now it's N'Keal Alexander Walker. You can make some decisions. Richey can make some decisions. Luke Kennard comes in, hits some pull-ups, hits some threes. You can just do a little bit of everything. And then there's like the Dyson Daniels of it all. And that's where I'll pause and ask you a question, Steve. How have you absorbed this offensive stretch from Dyson Daniels, or just the offensive season in general for Dyson Daniels?
I'm fine with it. I think he's a player that you need to keep involved, because if he is able to drive and force help with your best lineups, that's a plus. And any offense you get from him should be a plus. So you don't want to necessarily turn him into, hey, man, you were just in the corner or in the dunker spot. So I think keeping him involved, putting him in action is something I liked early in the season. Not just pick and roll, but like get a pin down early in the clock. Let's see if you can turn the corner and see if your man has to do something, and then we continue our flow. So I don't really have too many concerns. What say you?
I think I'm in a weird place with it, because I think to your overall point, keeping him involved and letting him make decisions against tilted defenses is a good thing. I think for me, I was just kind of expecting him to be more aggressive than he's been. Like he's just largely not taking threes at this point, which not the greatest 3-point shooter anyway, but some of the threes that he is driving out of, it kind of hurts the flow of the Hawks offensively. And so that's where it's like, okay, what exactly is the mindset for you? Like, I don't think it's inherently bad for you to look to be ball mover, keep things going, you know, drive, make the pass, lurk around the dunker spot, and then you get something else later. Like, none of that is inherently bad. If that is all that you're doing, that could provide a hitch and that could provide a helping place for defenses. So I'm just kind of monitoring that portion of the program for him. But beyond that, he is still giving you off-ball value. Like the screening from him and some of the slips they can get into, and then getting that flows into some of the playmaking. Like I've liked that from him. Like him plus Jalen has been a fun pick and roll combination. I can quickly pull up those numbers and see how effective it's actually been, but at least pulling those up on film, like I like the concept of that. But yeah, it's just kind of uneven for me. Just kind of want him to find the right blend of I want to keep things moving versus I can get downhill a little bit too. I have open shots, like I have the freedom to take these, especially now since everyone has a little bit more freedom right now. So I just want to see a slightly better blend.
Fantastic. Understood. So last week you talked about the Raptors. This week you talked about the Hawks. Do you have any other Hawks thoughts?
Well, I shouted out Mo Gay last week, so I don't want to hang there too long.
Fantastic.
The random stretches of him at center have been kind of neat, but I think that's the major stuff. All-star Jalen Johnson, get him in. He's been that good. I think that, last thing, the Ricochet thing, him just not really closing games the last three or four, I think three of four.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just kind of monitoring Atlanta Hawks late lineup stuff, period. Like, I think Beat Krejci has just kind of forced the hand a little bit with how well he shot the ball, and he's holding up enough defensively, or at least has the size to do so. But, like, I would like to see, like, an actual year two leap for Ricochet and a little bit more opportunity there. So we'll see just how that progresses moving forward. But I think that'll do it for me.
Makes sense.
Hawks thoughts.
Makes sense. I appreciate it. Shout out to Nikias. And speaking of leap, don't leap out of your chair. We will be back after this break. I will attempt to figure out the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Cleveland Cavaliers.
And we are back with this episode of the Dunker Spot. And Steve, it is time to post up. I'm tossing you the entry pass, letting you set up shop. Who's making you go, who's got you thinking right now?
I'm thinking about the Minnesota Timberwolves. And I'm trying to figure out what this team is. Not in a bad way, if you're a Wolves fan, but I'm trying to understand what this year has meant. So they're fifth in offensive rating this year. They were eighth last year. They're 11th in defensive rating. Last year, they were sixth. That, to me, is a positive sign in the sense that I don't think the Wolves have to be top five defense or bust because of the improvements they've done offensively. They're ninth in points per game. They're fifth in field goal percentage. I think last year, they were 16th. Fifth in three-point percentage, which is interesting. So trying to get some quality shots up. They are 9-5, Nikias. And this is the stat that everyone's throwing around. They are 9-0 against the sub 500 teams this year. They are 0-5 against 500 or better teams this year. And I'm trying to figure out how to process that. Their wins, I believe their last eight, they beat the Kings, they beat the Jazz, they beat the Kings, they beat the Jazz, they beat the Nets, they beat the Hornets, they beat the Pacers. Obviously, they beat the Blazers start the season, they beat Dallas here recently. Those five losses, it's two losses to the Lakers. It's two losses to the Nuggets, and it's one loss in the Garden against the Knicks. And I don't necessarily know how to balance Minnesota's improvements against their performance against some of these top teams. Mm-hmm. The Lakers scored 128 and 116 against them. Denver scored 127 and 123, and the Knicks scored 137. So what do we do with this good team that has a proven formula that not only works in the regular season, but we know it works in the playoffs? They have improvements. Like, if we had come in here and I had told you, hey, Julius Randle is going to have an average of 24.5 points, career high 6.1 assists and 7 rebounds, shooting 52%, boy, we'd think the Wolves are doing something crazy, huh? Mm-hmm. If we had come in and said Jaden McDaniels is actually going to make the offensive leak and average 17 a night, hey, what's going on with the Wolves? If Anthony Edwards continues to get better, this is a team that has six players that average double figures in scoring. This should be a positive. What do we do with this in the case that they play these top teams? And is it the defense that's not holding up? Is it the offense that's not holding up? And I feel like that's the in-between. That's the work they're going to have to put in during this regular season to kind of figure it out. When they play Denver, with Anthony Edwards, we've seen growth, right? Yep. Quick decisions this year. Decisive drives are there. Added the post ups, getting him involved in more movement. But the post ups, hey, I can see your help. I don't really care about it. I can make the plays I want. Against Denver, where they mix different things in, it felt like a little bit more pick and roll for Anthony Edwards. Mm-hmm. And this is where Denver mixed coverages really well. And I feel like, and I wonder if that's just going to be the continued thing for Anthony Edwards. And that's where I'm like, does Minnesota have to just figure out the playoff questions during the regular season, or they have to just continue to build this base this way? Because we saw elements of, hey, Anthony Edwards, you're in pick and roll. Here's two on the ball. Have fun. Mm-hmm. Oh, here you are in pick and roll. Here's a drop. Try that. Hey, here's a switch, man. So now let's get you thinking a little bit. Let's get you a little less decisive. Mm-hmm. Part of their advantage is, you know, Julius Randle playing well, getting downhill. They're getting them more elbow catches. They're clearing space for him to get to his left hand. That adds movement because now, again, you can get to some of the screening and splits for Anthony Edwards to get him the ball downhill. What do you do against a team that says, hey, Julius Randle, that's fantastic. We are either going to put size on you or we're going to put a wing that can keep the ball in front. Mm-hmm. And now, how many buckets does Julius Randle have to make to make that an advantage? Nas Reed, I feel like he's been good. He's been very decisive. Mm-hmm. But now, in particular with those two, if teams, and I'm talking about the good team, like the good team sounds rude, but like the top tier teams in theory, if they're going to say the Nas Reed, Julius Randle lineup is just going to be a switch lineup, or let's put a guard wing on them, how do you create the same advantages? Because the gift of those two is the blend of what they have, the scoring, the driving, they can space, you don't necessarily know what's going to happen, they can poke at fives. Makes it tough. But if Denver's going to put Bruce Brown and Spencer Jones out there against them, how do they take that off the board throughout the regular season and regain their advantage with those lineups? Because I think it's easy to point to, okay, the Randle Reed lineups need to do something defensively. I think the effort's been there. But obviously, you can probably go to your local statistician and get a Rudy Gobert on-off split that will make you feel good about it's talking about that defense, and I understand it. But you need that lineup to work because offensively it gives you a boost. If teams are going to get back to that, if teams are going to get back to just showing help on Anthony Edwards drives and, hey, here's three people looking at you, where are we going to get you the ball? That's where I'm trying to figure out and find a way. What does that look like?
No, I think that's fair. And I think my initial thought, you know, well, you let me know you want to talk about Minnesota. And, like, watching that Denver game in particular, like, I'm glad you hit on the coverage mixture that Anthony Edwards saw. Because I think it forced Randle, Jaden, and others. Like, it just, I think my broader Minnesota takes, like, so much of this offensively has kind of felt like isolation. And not in the literal sense. But it's like Ant's doing good things kind of in a vacuum. Randle's doing good things kind of in a vacuum. Jaden McDaniels doing good things in a vacuum. And, like, for me, against the top teams, you kind of need the blend of Ant is making everyone go, and Julius Randle is puncturing things. You're showing help to him, too. Now it's Jaden coming in the wave, et cetera. And it hasn't felt like a ton of that for me offensively. And defensively, I'm not going to do the local statistician thing. But, like, the defense has just kind of been untenable with Rudy off the floor for large portions of this year.
And I think to your you're gonna do the thing again.
I'm not gonna do the thing. No, don't do that. But no, in all seriousness, I do think to your earlier question about, like, is it the offense, is it the defense when you get to these top teams? If you can make Anthony Edwards think, and again, you're not getting the wave of Ant's playing well and Randle's playing well, and here's Jaden McDaniels, and then here's some shot making from the guards, etc. You then go to the other end. And as you've alluded to, like, Rudy's still a very good defender, but, like, teams are still, we can put him in action and feel like we can get some good stuff. If you have that against the top tier teams, like you mentioned, like the Lakers in particular, like, do you think Luka Doncic is afraid or Austin Reeves is afraid of, like, Rudy Gobert in drop, regardless of how good he is in drop? No, not really. So, like, if Rudy can be tested in these top matchups and then he goes to the bench and you just do not have rim protection at this point, and now some of the drives open up, like, that's where it's just like, the defense kind of gives me some angst in that regard. If we're talking about the, you know, through the context of them versus the top teams in the West or just top teams in general, like, all of these offenses have guys that can just poke at a matchup or destroy pick and roll in general. And so, like, if Rudy can get dinged, everyone else is getting dinged at that point.
No, I hear that. And I think defensively they have some questions in a playoff context, but I also kind of like we've seen them figure it out in a series. Yeah. And so game plan defense can give you some leverage in those moments as far as we want to take X, Y, and Z away in a series. I think to your point about it feeling like it's in a vacuum, it's kind of weird because they kind of need it to be. If you go back to that OKC series, they have to win some matchups against some teams that say, hey, we are just going to switch or we don't really care about X, Y, Z. They need that. And so how do you balance that? Because the one thing I've liked about Jaden McDaniels' growth offensively this year, it's not just, oh, he's shooting better. He's more involved. And so it's easy to say, okay, guy brings the ball up the court or initiates offense. But that's important to get him, you know, like Minnesota's working to get the ball up quicker in the court. You get him a dribble handoff with 18, 19 o'clock. He gets to operate in pick and roll. He gets downhill. Okay, this is good. Because if he's driving and he's forcing help and he's to be able to score in the paint, he's able to make some of these kicks. That kickstarts your offense in a different way. Sometimes offensively, you just have to get a guy a rhythm and give them a touch and let them kind of flow and go. So I've enjoyed the experience of watching him just kind of explore the space a little bit more. And it's interesting to see he kind of had like a couple pocket passes to Rudy Gobert where it's like, hey, man, can you catch the ball? And I was like, ah, okay, understood. I get it. But you add the Dante DiVincenzo in his play and finding a consistency there. I think the Julius Randle, Rudy Gobert pick and roll has been interesting, especially when they clear side. Because Randle's been looking to get downhill and play with force, and
he's hitting.
Okay. So I mean, if it's 4 or 5, are you going to switch? Does Randle care about it? Are you going to drop? Is he going to tap the space? But there's things they've added. There's layers they've added to their offense that I think are important. But now I need to see it against those teams. I need to see it against, like, I need to see what it means overall. I think that's where I'm at because I feel good about where Minnesota's at to a degree. I mean, the Western Conference is tough, right?
Yeah.
And they're 9-5, and 9-5 gets you the sixth spot depending on the day. But it's the, like, it's the West. So if you win 4 in a row, you might be 3. Like, there's no, the separation isn't high. So can they put themselves in a position to where this formula could pay off in the playoffs?
I think even speaking right there, Steve, like, obviously we are in mid-November, so these things are going to change. You already mentioned the volatility of the standings. But like, if the Wolves land on this side of the bracket, then you're looking at probably the Nuggets in round 2, and they play Denver pretty, like, they just lost, but like, they generally play and match up pretty well with Denver. Like, that's a series that at the very least they're going to walk in with confidence in, that kind of thing. So like, that doesn't feel untenable for them. Just a couple of stats for you, Steve. One you'll like, one you probably won't.
Okay.
One to your Julius Randle point. We were talking about this a little bit pre-show. There have been 70 players that have logged at least 100 drives so far this season. The Wolves generating 1.28 points per possession on trips featuring a Randle drive. That is number one of that 70-player list.
Clip that.
Hitting people, and the playmaking off of those drives have also been pretty fun to watch. But yeah, like, Julius Randle, he's just been insane to start the year. And not to spoil too much, but like, he's just playing at an all-star level, just flat out, full stop. Exclamation point if you want. He's been that good. The second thing that I was quickly trying to get, okay, what does Minnesota look like against like the top 10 offenses in the league? It's a 130 defensive rating in those games, Steve, when the Wolves face the top 10 defense this year. That is 27th in the league. Now, again, small sample, like, you're not playing a top 10 offense every night. A team that was top 10 the night you played them might be like 14th now. Like, there's always this, that kind of funny stuff with an early season sample. But it does kind of underscore, hey, you kind of have to figure it out when you get the Thunder and Shea, and when you get the Lakers and Luka and Austin Reeves and or LeBron James, as he's slated to make his return later tonight. Eyeball emoji, question mark. But like, when you have those, the Houston Rockets, who are still the best offense in the league, despite being like 30th in 3-point volume in the half court, and but they're making the threes that they do take, and they do, when they do miss shots, they're grabbing like 40% of those miss. Like, it's just weird. But even with them, like, okay, you got to you have to deal with Kevin Durant. I'm excited to see Kevin Durant versus Jaden McDaniels. It's going to be a good time. But like, you got to end possessions against them. And so like, it's, you get these offenses, you have to have answers, or at the very least you have to have a level of confidence in what you're trying to accomplish against these teams. And so I think it's going to be a fair thing to monitor moving forward.
Well, we have door number 3, which is, the answer may just be Anthony Edwards.
Yeah, that's and also true.
That's something that we can't deny because we've seen him do it over and over again. And when he is decisive, when he is going out and attacking, the scoring pops in a way that, what do you do with this guy? But when Anthony Edwards is able to play with that kind of composure, scoring and playmaking wise, it's just really hard to deal with. And I do like the flow that they've had with him this season, as far as a little bit more movement, a little bit more getting from action to action, a little bit more getting him in the post. And hey, I see you, big guy, trying to show help. I don't necessarily care. I'm going to shoot a fadeaway, a pick and roll. If I can get downhill, I'm going. And so if more teams are going to throw that coverage, he's going to get more reps against it, and he's going to get that blend. And that's when Minnesota is really tough.
Yeah, and I would say, just to the overall portion of this conversation, if there's a team that has earned the right to figure this out during the regular season in the West, like non-championship division, it's probably the Wolves, as they just lived in the Western Conference Finals as of late. And so, like, I think it's fair for, you know, not that either one of us are doing this, but just in general, fair to point out, hey, this looks kind of rickety without being like, well, the Wolves are frauds. Like, no, I think they have earned benefit of the doubt here to figure things out, get and stay fully healthy, all those things. So
okay.
I understand why the Wolves are making you think. They're a good team that has to figure things out against good teams, despite having a history of beating good teams in the playoffs.
Exactly. And so I'm glad we talked through this. I feel better about it. I have another team that I'd like to talk about and think about, and I've been thinking and trying to figure out what to do with. The Detroit Pistons are number one in the Eastern Conference. Do you know who's number two, Nikias?
Who?
You guessed it. The Cleveland Cavaliers, 10-5. And I don't know what to do with the Cleveland Cavaliers. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I'm literally trying to figure out how to process them in their current state. So 11th in offensive rating. Last year, they were first. You mentioned historic.
They were flirting with the highest offensive rating in the NBA. Yeah.
There it is. There it is. Their 9th in defensive rating. Last year, they were 8th. 7th in points per game. Their 3rd in 3-point makes a game at 15.9. They were 2nd. Last year at 15.9, so that hasn't changed. 19th in three-point percentage, which is interesting. 7th in assists per game. They're 24th in points in the paint. Last year, they were 9th. And 39.5% of their points come from three. That's 4th in the NBA. I think it was 39.1 last year. The Cavs are a proven product to me. And the fact that they're still number two is a credit to Kenny Atkinson and everyone in that locker room right now for the effort they've given. Are there some playoff questions? Yes, that's understood. The most part, we know who the Cleveland Cavaliers are. Mm-hmm. For me, early in the season, when you were one of those teams, you're kind of in the checklist zone for me. Okay, what are you trying to do offensively? Have you added anything offensively? Are you trying to do something different? Are there any tweaks defensively? Okay, got it. Cool, cool, cool. Let's move on. Mm-hmm. You can't really do that with this year's Cavs team because they have just had a lot of injuries. Mm-hmm. We have not seen Max Strus. We saw them navigate without Darius Garland, and then we saw Darius Garland come back, and we saw the Cavs do what they did when Darius Garland came back, and then Darius Garland was out again. And so at what point do you try and understand what this team is now versus what they could be, and how do you balance it? They have to manage Lonzo Ball throughout the season. Like, there's just a lot of different things that are moving and they're figuring out. In my head, one, I like the self-awareness from this team. To understand, hey, we are not what we were last year. We cannot rely on that as our base. We just have to figure out how to win. And I wonder how much does this moment enhance some of their rotation players? Like, Donovan Mitchell has been incredible this year. Evan Mobley, we'll talk about in a second, but he's been good. We know what Jared Allen does. But everyone else is getting repetitions during this time stretch that should help them going forward as far as being able to play on both ends of the floor. So how much of a boost do they get from this quote-unquote adversity versus, okay, what are we? And that's hard for a team that's had success to understand, okay, it's not coming as easy as it was last year. Last year, they were an offensive juggernaut. They can knock on the door and eventually, hey, we're just going to outscore you. And or we're going to have the nights where the defense works and you're going to have a tough time. They were really good last year. This year, they're having to figure it out, man. Like, it's the down 6, down 8. Okay, let's find a way. They're doing that, though. So to their credit, they're finding a way. I've just been trying to figure out, is there a specific thing that this team is lacking? And I wonder, because they've had nights defensively where the transition defense is not great, and then they can't keep the ball in front, and they're giving up drives. And then they too cannot get drives into the paint. And I'm like, well, what do we do with that? So I looked up the drives per game from last year and this year, thanks to the NBA's tracking data. So last year, you had Garland at 14.5. You had Mitchell at 12.1. You had Ty Jerome at 8.4. You had Mobley at 6.6. You had Hunter at 3.6. This year, drives per game, Donovan Mitchell, 13.2. Garland in his limited games, 11. Mobley's up to 9.4. Mm-hmm. Hunter's up to 7.3. And then we get to Craig Porter Jr. at 3.8. Mm-hmm. So how much are we just leaning into Donovan Mitchell and Evan Mobley? Please do things. Because if you go to the tracking data, you look at the touches per game, Mitchell's averaging 79.4 touches a game. Mobley's averaging 73.4. Last year, they were at 60.3 and 57.9 collectively. Mm-hmm. So we're just asking y'all to do a lot more than before. Now, Donovan Mitchell's been game. I think when you watch the Cavs, you got to appreciate the effort that Donovan Mitchell has given every single night to score the basketball, to look to drive the basketball, to force help, to make plays. He's been lights out. He deserves your respect. Evan Mobley is technically having a career year, Nikias. Mm-hmm. Career high in points per game, career high in assists. That's 18.9 points. That's 4.3 assists, I believe. Career high in steals a night, 1.2. There was a really fun stat I wanted to drop before last night's action where he's the only player with a very, 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 very specific stat line.
The Thad Young is what we call it.
Yeah, it was going to make me mad, but I think he may have bottled it. He's making almost two threes a night, shooting 4.7, highest volume of his career. Career low in field goal percentage. I don't know what to do with that. And the reason why I don't know what to do with that is because I have the balance of he has to do more things, right? He has more responsibility. They want him to attack more. This is a positive. In the playoffs, he's going to have to play at a certain level. And defenses are going to be like, hey, here's a wing. Or hey, here's player X. Or hey, here's some more help on those drives you're hitting us with. So how do I balance what he's doing in the regular season versus what could be coming? Is that fair, Nikas?
No, I think that is fair. And I think we can start with the stars very quickly. One, Donovan Mitchell has been insane. But as you and I have both kind of talked about, and you even hinted on it through that, teams are really working to take away the drives from the Cleveland Cavaliers. And they're working to take away the drives from Donovan Mitchell in particular. Like one of the things that I put in, we're going to get into some All-Star talk a little bit later, but the thing I've made sure to include in the All-Star blur for Donovan Mitchell, who should just make the team firmly, exclamation point, et cetera. Last year, he saw a help defender present on about 75% of his drives. Pretty solid rate, nothing out of the norm for a star. This year, that is up to nearly 83%. One of the highest clips in the league. We just talked about like John Morant in the Grizzly section not too long ago.
That was about 85. I was just going to say, is this the second week in a row we've had an 83% help rate?
It's kind of, it's John Morantian. Yeah, it is insane. They are just saying absolutely not. Now, Donovan Mitchell, because he's so good, all right, well then cool, high pick and roll, reject, here's a windmill gather. I see your bodies, I'm just slithering around them, I'm finishing anyway. But like, that's hard, man. That's hard to do. With legitimate volume. Like you mentioned, what was it, about 13 drives a game for Donovan Mitchell? Mm-hmm. Was that where you were?
Yes.
Yeah, like Shea's at 20, you know what I mean? In terms of the volume there. And like he is, despite how good he is, et cetera, like he's not seeing that level of help because of how OKC spaces the cuts, et cetera, et cetera. And so like, you can't, it's hard to get to that volume when you're seeing this amount of bodies all the time. And I wonder how much of that is, this is the template we are taking over Cleveland, you have to solve this.com versus they haven't had Darius Garland and he just opens up the floor to where teams just cannot do that. And if it's the latter, then I don't have any sort of concern whatsoever because I expect Garland at some point is just going to be consistently healthy and you just can't do that. And then Donovan Mitchell remains great and Darius Garland makes plays and that takes pressure off of Evan Mobley. And it's just a cascading effect from there. If it is the former, they have the talent to do so, especially when Garland is healthy. But like that is more, I need to pay close attention to how you're working to eliminate some of this help. Is it cutting? Is it more flares or pin-in screens to try to counter some of this stuff? Is it where you're initiating your action so teams can't help? Are we going to see more flat spacing to try to alleviate some of the early help that you're seeing? Like that's where I get into more of what is your process against this? Because teams are just doing this. This is just a template now.
To your cutting point, I do appreciate the Jared Allen, I'm spaced on the perimeter, and now I'm going to just dive.
Dive, yeah.
part of what they do in Cleveland. And I think it's, well, sticking on Jared Allen real quick, it's very interesting to see how this works because he's a very impactful player for the Cleveland Cavaliers. Sometimes he hasn't closed games, and then he plays well, and you're reminded of how important he is to the Cleveland Cavaliers. And then in the back of your brain, you're remembering the playoffs. So it's like, okay, what are we doing defensively? How are we handling when teams just switch against y'all? What do you do in these moments? And so I find myself in an odd spot with Jared Allen. I'm like, he's very good, but this team needs X. So my eyes are focused on X. I don't think that's mm-hmm. fair.
No, I think that's fair. And like, honestly, for Allen and Mobley, it's been weird to judge them because like, it's very clear that they are good and they mm-hmm. are having good seasons overall, but there have also been pockets for both where it's just like, Evan, I'm glad. I love the offensive evolution. You know that I love the Evan Mobley expansion of role, et cetera. Hey, man, these are a lot of early jumpers. I don't think you had to take that one. Or here's a drive in the traffic. I don't think you had to take that one. Defensively, I love Evan Mobley on defense. Ooh, these are a couple of switches in a row that you got turned around immediately. This is not what I'm accustomed to. You go to Jared Allen. You mentioned some of the late diving, the finishing, sprinkling a random like 9-foot jumper. The screening is always going to be good, et cetera. It's like, okay, this is what Jared Allen does. And then if he does have the weird finishing game, then it's like, okay, well, if you're missing shots in here when we're already dealing with a crowd, why wouldn't we just go to Dean Wade at the four and try to open this up instead of you? Defensively, you've talked quite a bit about this guy is very good, but hey, man, these switches, et cetera. If he's having one of those, just like, okay, yeah, why wouldn't we just go Dean Wade at the four? Or just have DeAndre Hunter and we end up get another wing in here. Shout out Jalen Tyson. Why not just have him and get him some reps? Since we might need him down the road anyway. And so it's just like, y'all are good, but it doesn't feel as good as it's been. And when you have these playoff questions in the back of your hand, in the back of your head, it also just kind of colors some of the conversation around it. Because good in a vacuum is fine, but like you need this to be, is this playoff level good now to where I don't have to worry about this when we hit April? If the answer is no, it feels worse, even if it isn't actually worse.
No, I think that's fair. I think circling back to Evan Mobley, so in the restricted area, he's shooting 68.8%. Last year, mm-hmm. that was at 76.2%. Last year, 47.7% of his attempts were in the restricted area. This year, it's 32.1%. Mm-hmm. And so we've got more above the break threes, and we've got more aggression and more drives. Can we get more paint finishes and just kind of balance this out? I wonder if that's the thing. I will say the one positive that I'm monitoring that will help them in the future is how they've used DeAndre Hunter. Mm-hmm. I think his drives have been really important. I think his usage has been important. Having that kind of established with Darius Garland coming back, I think gives you a different wave. It gives you different lineup versatility. So for me, it's just like Cleveland's good. They can get better. How do they navigate this stretch? Because the Eastern Conference, again, land of opportunity. They're second right now. The difference between them and the Miami Heat is a game and a half right now. And Miami's seven.
Yeah.
So if you put yourself in a position where you have a week of maybe not some fun, now people are going to hit the alarm button. I'm like, I don't know if we have to do that because they're mm-hmm. good. But at the same time, I don't know where we're at. So they play Houston. They play the Pacers. They play the Clippers, all home games. I think this is their longest home stand of the year. And then they get to go on the road and face Toronto and Atlanta. So we'll see how good are y'all, how good are we. Mm-hmm. I'm just keeping an eye on the Cavs. Just been thinking about it.
No, I think that's fair. So as you mentioned, the Cavs, the 2 seed right now. Half a game behind the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Atlanta Hawks, who we talked about a little bit earlier. Also a half game behind the Cleveland Cavaliers, the Toronto Raptors, who you just mentioned on the schedule. And we recently talked about it. I tell you what, the Raptors keep racking up wins. But that's fair. While we're in the East, Steve, and to peel the curtain back, I already told Steve this before we started recording, but like I said over the weekend, hey, I want to talk about the Milwaukee Bucks. I have some thoughts about the Milwaukee Bucks. I want to check in with them. And so as of recording, 8-7 right now, they've lost 2 games in a row. And so my initial thing was going to be, well, this Bucks offense has been very good. They still remain the best half-court offense in basketball per cleaning the glass, though that lead is starting to shrink as the sample grows and other teams start to heat up. But best half-court offense in basketball, that's neat. Giannis has been incredible. Ryan Rollins had a good season. We now have Kyle Kuzma in the starting lineup, and Kyle Kuzma just very quietly making impactful plays for the Milwaukee Bucks on both ends. That should be said. But you get stuff on the offense. And then we get to the defense. And I did not anticipate being as annoyed with Milwaukee's defense this year as I have been in pockets, and particularly recently. And so circling back to the beginning, my thoughts on Milwaukee, I had them as finishing as a top four seed this year. Thought the offense was going to be really good, point Giannis, guard play, three-point shooting, et cetera. They're not taking as many threes as I thought. That's also an interesting thing for me. But you have that template. And then defensively, Miles Turner and Giannis up front, I thought they're going to switch more. They should be fine on that end. Was kind of my initial thought heading in. And they certainly are switching more. Like, I think this is the switchiest season of Miles Turner's career in pick and roll. Like, Giannis switching about the same rate as he did last year. Overall, the switch rate for Milwaukee, they've jumped from, like, middle of the pack last year to just firmly in the top 10, flirting with top 5 in terms of switch rate. So that's been up. But there have been so many loud breakdowns for them to where, on one hand, I just have Steve's voice in my head where it's like, well, this is why teams just automatically switch everything, because if there's any kind of indecision, this is how you get 2 on the ball, yada, 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 yada. You should listen to Steve, folks. And on the other hand, it's just like, it can't be this with some of y'all. And like with Giannis in particular, he has been part of more defensive breakdowns than I would like. And I give grace because he has this ridiculous offensive role of usage in which he has quite literally been the most double-teamed player in the league this year. So you give the grace there. And then he's also been dealing with knee stuff. And now he might just be out for a while. So I just have the general, what is Milwaukee about to look like if Giannis misses an extended stretch of time? But yeah, it's just kind of like Giannis hanging back. Are we switching? Are we not? Like, he's just been a part of a lot more of those now. So like, you want better from him when he does come back and when he does get healthy, et cetera. It's just been weird. Like, they're kind of on track to be good offense, fine defense, but the defense is lagging a little bit behind. It's kind of stressing me out. And now we have this Giannis stretch. And as you mentioned, the East being the land of opportunity, Milwaukee 8-7 right now, Orlando 7-7. Boston's won their last two. They're 7-7. Like, there's just a grouping of teams here to where if this is 2 weeks without Giannis or 3 weeks without Giannis, where is Milwaukee going to be once he returns?
Well, here's the tricky part about that. Their next 5 games, home against Philadelphia, home against Detroit, home against the Blazers, at Miami, at New York. Could be a show.
Could be interesting. Which, I mean, to that end, like, we saw the Bucks without Giannis just get a win over Golden State. Ryan Rollins lost his mind. It's not like they can't find points and they can't tighten things up defensively. Because, again, I would be in a different place with the defense if this is, oh, snap, nobody can keep the ball in front. This is a problem. This is like mental pointer to point of the screen. Actually, I'm going to stay attached to this, and the other person doesn't know that I'm staying attached to this. It's 2 on the ball. Like, I would imagine those kind of things can get cleaned up. And then from there, okay, now we can kind of lean to the help. Now, especially with Kuz in, like, we have a little bit more size 3 through 5. Like, we can lean into some of this stuff. Like, I think there is, like, a very easy pathway to this getting better. So, like, I'm not pressing the big red button. It's just more of an acknowledgement of this has been more rickety than I anticipated. And I want to see how long it takes for that to clean up.
Understood. I think they're a team that just has to be more solid defensively. Closeouts have to be good. Keep the ball in front. Don't overhelp. And just kind of get you deep in the clock, and they're okay. So we'll see what the stretch looks like. Hopefully Giannis gets well soon.
Yeah. We hope Giannis gets well soon indeed. And we hope that you stick with us as we take yet another break. But when we return, it's time for Steve to laugh at my all-star list. I have some all-star thoughts. It's time to talk about this new format and some players that should be in line to make all-star appearances so far. So please stay with us. And we are back. And Steve, it is time to hit the elbow. We're going to talk about some players. But as we have a new All-Star Game format, I felt like this feels like an appropriate time to kind of check in with some early All-Star thoughts, see who's on pace to make this year's game with this new format. We're getting Team USA versus Team World. We're going to have 12 from each conference still. We're going to end up getting 3 teams of 8 with a Team World team sprinkled in there. Like, it's... I guess I'll start there before we actually get into some of these players. I wrote an article about it on yahoosports.com. Please check it out. How do you feel about the new All-Star Game format?
We'll see. I think okay. It's interesting. I mean, for me, it's like, okay, how do we make this as competitive as possible? I think that's the key. And splitting it into three different games, I think, is interesting. You can't get the segment where, okay, this game gets completely out of reach in theory. And so hopefully it'll work out. The timing is going to get interesting. I think you do have to nail that to a degree in which this works at a little bit more of a quicker pace and a format. And we're not just standing around for 2 hours. But I'm intrigued to see what it looks like. I'm excited. I think the most interesting part is that the all-star voting is now positionless. And I am only mentioning this because you, Nikias Duncan, are not going to be happy with some of the early returns on this. Bigs are about to be disrespected in a way that we have not seen before. You ready for LaMelo Ball? Well, second in voting?
Maybe. The people do love LaMelo. So, like, it's going to be an interesting one for sure. Like, the positionless nature of it is going to be interesting. And also, like, making sure that, hey, we have to have at least 8 international players. Like, I don't think it's going to be difficult to get there based on what's happened this year. I think if this change was made a year or two ago or just in a different season, it could get like, ooh, so we got these 5. Who else? But I do think we just have so many guys playing well right now that I don't think it's going to be an issue this year. So good timing on that front at the very least.
Yeah, I do think it's interesting. Again, the All-Stars are going to be the All-Stars. So if that number does get met, then Adam Silver will let us know who will be added to those teams. And we should get more. It's going to be interesting to see who's tied to what, depending on who's playing well and who didn't make it. So we'll talk about that later. Yeah.
Shout out Team World participant Carl Anthony. Yeah, we're going to get there, which I guess before digging into my list here, Wemby's about to miss some time.
He's an all-star. Sorry.
He is an all-star, but I'm just keeping tabs. Like, Wemby's about to miss some time. We just talked about Giannis. Going to miss some time. Like, the injury portion of this, in addition to, like, we do want to have 16 to Team USA or U.S. representatives to 8 world representatives. Like, the injuries and the injury replacements, I feel like it's going to get interesting this year because of that format. But again, luckily, we just have a bunch of players playing well, so maybe it won't be too much of a problem if we get a relative build of health there.
Well, but before you get to your list, I was going to say, in theory, you could probably put 6 names down for Team World. The injuries would impact Team World to a significant degree. Because in my head, Giannis, Jokic, Shai, Luka, Wemby, Şengün. You can go ahead and put those 6 down.
Yeah.
Last 2, we can figure it out. But that should be the 6, right?
Yeah, I think they're just in. I think they're just in. But okay. So here are the 24 that I have, or as of Monday morning at the very least. So games played through Sunday. And as usual, like I do try to keep games played in mind. Like, there is not an official games played minimum for all-star stuff. But because I think about actual, you know, award stuff on top of this, I just try to remain consistent throughout that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so at the time that article was released, if you're talking about 65 games out of 82, that's around 79%. Of games. And so league average at the time was 13 games played. So you're looking at a minimum of 10 for everyone to be in. And so the guys who were immediately out based on that, LaMelo, who had only played 7 games to that point, Bam, who had only played 8 games to that point, Anthony Edwards, who had played 9 games to that point.
Anthony Edwards is an all-star. So you don't
have to. Yeah, like, he's going to be in. Especially like, if he stays, he's played well enough, and if he stays healthy, like, he's just going to hit the threshold. That's fine. But just for the purposes of transparency for the article, like, he was just underneath that. So that's why his name is going to be mentioned heavily here for me. But he has absolutely played that well. He's going to be an all-star if he's healthy. But we start out East, Steve. I went in alphabetical order. Naturally, we got to track the health of Giannis Antetokounmpo. But Giannis is in. He would be a Team World member. Scottie Barnes is in for me right now. Jaylen Brown is in for me. That's 3. Jalen Brunson is in. That'd be 4. And I think he's also out right now. So we keep tabs on that. Kay Cunningham is in. That's 5. Jalen Dern would be 6. Josh Giddey, 7. He would also be a Team World member. Jalen Johnson, 8. Tyrese Maxey, 9. Donovan Mitchell, 10. Norman Powell, the Miami Heat, 11, and Karl Anthony Towns, 12. And as we kind of joked about already, like, I think he would also have like some Team World eligibility if necessary. But those would be my 12 names in the Eastern Conference right now. So before getting into honorable mentions, does that sound about right? Is there any immediate disagreements that you have?
I'm a little intrigued by one name you mentioned, but I think most teams are well represented. I'm intrigued to see who was on the short list who barely wrapped out. Because here's the thing. I feel like an Orlando Magic will be there. No, I'm pretty good otherwise.
Okay. And to the honorable mentions, I do just have the Orlando Magic duo or Franz Wagner, who would absolutely have team world eligibility if necessary, and Paolo Banchero, who I guess also could. Again, they're just some Team USA / Italy stuff. But yeah, so those two honorable mentions for me. Wouldn't surprise me if one or both ends up making the All-Star game. Both have played pretty well this year. We've talked about Evan Mobley, honorable mention for me. Pascal Siakam, who, man, I just wish the Pacers were even pretend healthy to where Pascal could get more love for what he's putting together. Because, like, that brother's seeing multiple bodies every time he gets a touch inside the three-point line and outside of it, for that matter. And he's just getting buckets and getting to the line and, like, pick-and-roll initiation, pick-and-roll usage as a screener. He don't know who his guard is going to be sometimes. Like, he's just playing well. It just has not mattered because the Pacers have not been healthy. But honorable mention for me, he'd have team world eligibility. Alex Saar is a name that I wanted to bring up here.
Okay.
Which, I mean, if we're doing, like, rookie sophomore stuff anyway, like, I think he's just going to be part of the weekend either way. So, one, there's a level of convenience here, but also 18-8-4 and two blocks a game for Alex Saar, and he's leveled up as a scorer. Like, he has just legitimately been good this year.
Okay.
And so he was a name that I thought about. Like, we'll see, like, how seriously he's considered if he maintains this level of play. I would anticipate, again, if they're going to be rookie sophomore game festivities, he's just going to be part of the weekend anyway. And so that would just be a very easy, hey, somebody tweaked an ankle. Can you just go ahead and slide on over? But those were the immediate honorable mentions for me. Is there anyone that you feel like I'm missing from the East?
No, we're good. What do you got in the West?
Okay. We move to the Western Conference. And once again, these are in alphabetical order. So as we start out West, we have Devin Booker. We just had a full episode about the Phoenix Suns, his growth, but career high in scoring. The assists are up there. Like, it's been a fun year for Devin Booker. So we got him. We have Stephen Curry, because of course you have Stephen Curry. We have Luka Doncic, obvious team world member. Kevin Durant. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, also a team world member. James Harden. Nikola Jokic, also a team world member. Lauri Markkanen, also a team world member. Julius Randle. We have Austin Reeves. We have Alperen Şengün, also a team world member. And Victor Wembanyama, who is currently out, but still would be a team world member. Those are the 12. Any immediate disagreements? How are we feeling?
Well, Anthony Edwards is going to bump someone off above your list, so I'm just going to throw that out there. I think the West gets a little tricky because it's the Western Conference, so it always does. So I quickly jotted down 12 names just to think. And this is one of those scenarios where I was like, Aaron Gordon is an all-star. Mm-hmm. And then I got to 12 names. I was like, what happened to Aaron Gordon? Because I put down Shai Jokic, KD, Şengün. I just went down the standings. Luka, Wemby, Anthony Edwards, Stephen Curry, Devin Booker. Lauri Markkanen's sixth in the league in scoring. Like, I'm sorry. You could probably knock him off, but he's playing very well. James Harden, Julius Randle. And I was like, Randle, Gordon, Murray. What's going to happen there is where I got some intrigue. And then there's still this man named LeBron James who's likely going to receive some votes from some folks. So the Austin Reeves deal is what's going to happen there.
He's averaging 28-8, dog. If Austin Reeves gets shunned from this, like, again, he has to maintain the level of playoffs. Like, if he just starts averaging like 17-7 on mid efficiency for like 2 months, like, he's probably going to drop. But like, if he's, hey man, it can't be him.
Hey, LeBron,
with what he's doing so far.
Hey, LeBron come back cooking, buddy.
He hasn't played yet. Like, I don't know if he's eligible for, like, all NBA stuff at this point.
He might not
be. At least he's, like, another tweak away or a rest game away or something. He's going to be close. If he overtakes Austin Reeves, like,
I'm just trying to prepare you for things that happen later in life.
I feel you. Like, you're not incorrect to bring it up. It's just one of those, like, hey, I think playing basketball has to matter to a certain extent. You know what I mean? Like, obviously, LeBron James, one of, if not the greatest player of all time, a lot more historical relevance, et cetera, et cetera. No one in their right mind should be, like, criticizing that portion. It's just the literal, he may be making his debut on November 18th, and Austin Reeves has done this to this portion of the year. Like, that would just be interesting for me.
Okay.
But there's the 12. So Anthony Edwards replacing someone, and we keep an eye on that grouping of themes. Okay. Honorable mentions for me, Danny Avdija, who continues to just drive all over the place, and he's just playing well. Three-point shot just seems to be real at this point. But he was mentioned for me. Jimmy Butler was mentioned for me. Stephon Castle out in San Antonio, if the Spurs were to get two, I think he'd be the second. You mentioned Aaron Gordon. I also have Aaron Gordon down. Chet Holmgren, who I talked about a little bit earlier. Jaden McDaniels, who you brought up, and I agree. He's having himself one heck of a year. Jamal Murray, also off to a great start this season. And then it's just like, to peel the curtain back, it's like, I know I can't have like a 4,000-word article. I can't shout out everyone. That's why I gave the disclaimer early in the article, like, hey, here's some honorable mentions. This is not everyone I have. Okay. So quickly, just to say the name, don't want to hang here too long because we're deep in the pod, but just want to say the name of Amen Thompson. I want to say the name again of Isaiah Hartenstein. I want to say out east, Brandon Ingram, RJ Barrett. Like, those are also two guys who have played well and at least deserve to have their name said, even if they don't ultimately make it. Like, just, like there are a lot of good performances and impactful performances happening this year. Before the injury division. So,
I'm not going to lie. If Toronto has the wins, I think Brandon Ingram should be there.
Okay. I mean, if he's going to make 60% of his middies and close games, like, hey, man. A world in which Toronto gets two would be interesting to me.
I think he would be the one.
Ooh, I would strongly disagree with that. Hey, man. I do not think one, I don't think he's been better than Scotty, but like I also don't think he's more popular than Scotty either.
He's popular in Canada right now.
So is Scotty. So there we go. And then just fictional rosters here. With Team World, you got Shea, Luka, Giddy, Giannis, Laurie, Jokic, Wimby, and Şengün. Obviously, injury stuff we're keeping track of. But like that would be the eight based on who I have right now. For one of the US-based teams, I tried to find a blend of like young, old, fast, slow, shooting, et cetera, et cetera. I tried to mix and match the skill sets here. So is it just Team East and Team West? Because you do have an uneven number of like West reps and East reps for Team World. But for the first team, we got Steph, Tyrese Maxey, Devin Booker, Austin Reeves, Jaylen Brown, Scottie Barnes, Julius Randle, and Karl-Anthony Towns. And on the second team, we've got Donovan Mitchell, Jalen Brunson, James Harden, Cade Cunningham, Norm Powell, Kevin Durant, Jalen Johnson, and Jalen Duren.
Interesting.
A quick interesting. You know what? We'll take that. We'll take that. It could be worse. I know when Steve disagrees. I'll just take that and humbly run with it. But that's where we're at. Those are the names that I'm considering right now. A lot of season left before we even get like first all-star returns officially and stuff like that. But want to take a quick peek. Wanted to take a quick peek.
Fantastic work.
There we go.
Hit the horns, buddy.
Okay, before I get in trouble, thank you for listening to or watching this episode of the Dunker Spot Podcast. If you haven't already, please subscribe. We're on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. Also, subscribe to the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. We are here every Tuesday and Friday, so continue to rock with us if you aren't already. You can follow me on socials at NikiasNBA. You can follow Steve on socials at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week. And boy, do we have a treat for you.